From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made last Friday when Rochester Police Department officers responded to a call on Avenue B. The mother of a 9-year-old girl told officers that she feared her daughter would harm herself and others. The girl ran from the home until officers caught up with her on Harris Street. In police body camera video released to the public on Sunday, an officer is seen asking the girl what's going on and how to help. When the girl's mother arrives, the girl becomes more upset. At that point, officers try to put the girl in the back of a patrol car. She repeatedly cries out for her father and resists officers' efforts to get her into the car. The video shows her kicking at the officers and trying to get away. RPD says that's why officers were, quote, required to take her down to the ground and handcuff her. Minutes later, as she still resisted going into the patrol car, officers talked about pepper spraying her and then did. The incident has led to outrage among the community, including from Mayor Lovely Warren. Once again, Rochester is in the national spotlight for an issue related to policing. The officers involved have been suspended until an internal investigation is concluded. Meanwhile, leaders across the community are calling for a reevaluation of policing procedures that involve minors and a commitment to culturally responsive mental health services. Reverend Lewis Stewart of United Christian Leadership Ministry and mental health advocate Melanie Funches are among them. They're joining us this hour to discuss this incident and what they think can change. I welcome them to the program now. The president of UCLM, United Christian Leadership Ministry, is Reverend Lewis Stewart. Reverend Stewart, welcome back to the program.
Good afternoon, Evan. Thank you for having me here.
It's good to have you, sir. And Melanie Funches, a mental health advocate, a member of the Greater Rochester Black Agenda Group and the Black Healers Network. Melanie, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for the opportunity, Evan. And I just want to say happy birthday, Reverend Stewart.
Oh,
thank you, Melanie.
Boy, oh boy.
I appreciate that.
That is very kind. And you know what? A little bit of light. I wish we were meeting under different circumstances. I don't want to play too much of the video. We have a short section of it. I just want to warn people. I mean, you might have seen it by now. This is mildly edited, and just understand it's only about 45 seconds here. This is just to understand sort of some of what that scene was like. Let's go ahead and listen.
Sit up.
No.
You're acting like a child.
I want to not hit my child.
Back to the house.
My arm,
let
I have a
right.
Back.
Stand up. Stand up.
Yeah, let the
stand up.
Arm.
Then stand up.
Dear, why okay. Just stop for a second and take a deep breath. Hey, just stop.
Please. I will get your dad.
Bro, you said that you were gonna pepper spray me. No, please, no, stop.
Sit back.
Oh, I got a bad arm.
Just spray her.
No, I have
just spray her at this point. I got her.
Yeah, it'll just cut. I can't do it. I just can't. I mean, that is. I suspect everyone listening, their hearts break for this girl who you can hear the fear in her voice. And it is remarkable to me to hear a police officer say to a 9-year-old, "You're acting like a child." And for her to have the presence of mind to remind him, I am a child. Let me just ask, but I'll start with Melanie Funches. Where do you start with this, Melanie?
Well, the thing for me is I see this two ways. I see this from the mental health, but I also see this as a mom, right? In both these things, this child was experiencing a trauma response. And what people need to understand is she's 9. The human brain is not fully developed till you're about 25. And the parts of your brain that need executive functioning, when you are in a trauma response, they are not working. So this child is 9 years old. Whatever happened prior to this that elicited her running away, she was in a trauma response when the officer first got to her. You trying to reason with her, you know, and as this escalates, the child has been traumatized. Something happened. And everything that they're doing is just escalating the child. The fact that he put his hand on her If you look in the very beginning of the video, he put his hand on her. The first thing you're taught in de-escalation training is do not put your hands on people. Have your open hand stance to let people then start to talk with them quietly and start to bring them down. He put his hand on her, and he didn't listen to her. And this child was in a traumatic, when you're in a trauma response, you have three things. When your limbic system is activating, your amygdala gets pushed, you do fight, flight, or freeze. Those are the three choices she had. And she didn't have to press. You just do it. It's what kept cavemen from being eaten by saber-toothed tigers. It's part of how we're hardwired. So she was having a trauma response.
Reverend Stewart, where do you start with this?
Well, I agree with everything Melanie has said and certainly support her perspective in this. There should have been a mental health worker called to help de-escalate that situation instead of the police. Whenever the police are involved in such, there is always an escalation of the situation or problem. And let me say this. As Melanie indicated, this child was traumatized. Whatever took place before, she was in a traumatic response mode, and the police were the wrong ones to handle it. And let me say also this, the police would not have used those use of force tactics against a white child in Greece, against a white child in Menden, against a white child in Brighton, nor against a white child anywhere as they did this black child. And this is not the first time this has happened. This has happened last year to a 10-year-old, where the 10-year-old was also handcuffed. So we need some new policies and procedures in the RPD that are going to really treat minors in a more humane way than we have been seeing done now. There must be an alternative. There must be a change in policies and procedures.
So the head of the Rochester Police Locust Club, Mike Mazzio, said that that there needs to be more investigation, that he wants some patience on this, and he said the entire scene was difficult for everybody. Melanie Funches, Mike Mazzio says that for the police officers, he wants some empathy for the officers who are shaken by hearing the interaction between that girl and her mother. What do you think?
Police officers are trained to walk into stress, are supposed to be trained to walk into stressful situations. The interaction between the girl and her mother. Now, understand. The mother was also in a trauma response. Something happened that caused the police to come there. The mother was in a trauma response. If you listen to some of the stuff the mother is saying, the mother is saying she had been in a headlock. The mother was in a trauma response. The child is in a trauma response. And people who are supposed to be trained to deal with these things should not say, oh, well, I was shaken. Then why are we paying you? Why are we paying you? You're supposed to be the cool, calm, and collected one in a situation. The fact of the matter is, I agree with Reverend Stewart. If these people had been white, if these people had been affluent, this would not have happened this way. The fact of the matter is, and we may not want to say, but I'll say it, that they do not see our humanity. And in them not seeing our humanity, they choose that they can treat us like animals.
Yeah, there's almost a nonchalance to the moment where the officer says, just spray her at this point.
Yes, yes. And that officer who suggested pepper spraying her and that officer who did the pepper spraying, both of them should be fired. There should be zero tolerance for officers who engage in use of force, who engage in use of force against minors, and who engage in use of force based upon a racial motive. And all those things were tied into here. And so, you know, I heard what you said. I saw the interview with Mike Mazzeo, and he's asking for empathy for the police officers. Yeah, but the police officers are adults. This is a child who was traumatized and has been severely traumatized. And my empathy is more for her because of the fact that her life as a black child was devalued by these police officers. I mean, you had 9 police officers on the scene. Now, admittedly, they came there because it was reported that a car was stolen. But yet when they saw this child in crisis, there should have been more of a humane intervention efforts that should have been utilized rather than resorting to old-style use of force methods that the police usually do. I am just appalled by what took place. I'm angered by it. Many people in the community are angered by it. And the fact is we need to look at new policies and ways of dealing with this thing. So I am on the UCLM has proposals dealing with de-escalation tactics, et cetera. But one of the things with the policies is there should be a ban on handcuffing children who are minors, and there should be a ban on the use of chemical sprays against minors. That is a no-no. It should not happen. And the fact is the community judges the police basically by what they see. And what they saw in this situation was demeaning, devaluing, and racist. And so the police are trying to effect a better relationship with the community, but it's just going the other way. Now the division, the gap has widened in terms of how the police or how the community view the police.
Well, New York State Senator, I was just going to add, New York State Senator Sommer Brook and Assemblymember DeMond Meeks did announce this week they are proposing legislation to ban the use of chemical agents like pepper spray on minors by police. Yes, Melanie.
There's a couple things I want to say here. One, I find it odious, which means disgusting, for Mike Mazzeo to try to deflect off of his people by deflecting energy to the mother of this baby who was also, like I said before, was also having a trauma response. Two, there is in the literature, this has been studied, that people see black children as older, as larger, and as more menacing for no good reason. It's because of the bias. The reason I bring this up is because the officer said to the little girl, "You're acting like a child." And she had to remind him. Thank God she had some presence of mind, even in her traumatized state, to say, "I am a child." And we're not saying an adolescent. This is a single-digit child. And so what we really need, we need to keep the focus where it belongs. The focus is on the culture of the Rochester Police Department, on the actions of those police officers, and the fact that we pay them to be able to be level-headed in a situation. Okay, so for them to say that they are shaken, that's not what we pay them for. Well, and they need to be held to a higher account.
So let me ask you, Melanie, I mean, I want to talk a little bit about an approach here that would have been more effective, because I've said it before and I will say this again. Anyone who's ever been in an argument, which is most human beings alive, is well aware that saying to the person you're arguing with, "Calm down, relax," that usually has the opposite effect. That is not an effective technique to actually get someone to calm down. It is usually seen as demeaning, condescending, and it's counterproductive. And to me, I mean, maybe I need to see more from this scene, and I'm sure officers are trained in different ways, and I'm sure there are officers who do a really good job of de-escalating. But at this scene, it amounts to an extended game of just yelling at somebody to calm down. Like, that's the tool we got in the box here, calm down, stop acting like a child. Can you imagine saying stop acting like a child to an adult? That doesn't work. Can you imagine saying it to a child when they are a child? So those are the tools in the toolbox that we saw on display here. So obviously that's not effective. I don't know if that is just a failure to act on training. But Melanie, what does whether it's police officer or ideally not, what does an effective outreach in that agitated, as you say, trauma response moment look like and sound like?
What could have been done is, you, first of all, you don't touch the young lady and say, let me hear you. I'm here. I'm listening. And listen to her. Get down on her level. So your eye level with her, right? So she doesn't see you as a threat. See, be on eye level with her. Talk to her and say, and then repeat back to her what you're hearing. She said, I can't go back there. And then you say to her, I hear you can't go back there. Can you say more? Tell me what's going on. And then and as you're talking in a calm, lower tone, and you're breathing, so that she can feel it, because we pass energy to one another. And if she hears you calmly asking and knows that you're hearing her, it can start to calm her down. What could have happened when the mother came, because there was more than one police officer, they could go, can you take care of that? And then I said, you look at me. Talking to the little girl, I said, look at me. I'm here. Look at me. And the thing is, if my thing is, but in order to do that, you have to see this child as a human. You have to see, as an adult, you have to see the child as if they could be your child. This is not expert training. If you've ever had children, if you've ever been a parent or a godparent or an uncle or an auntie, and you've had to battle out things between kids,
yeah,
you know what to do. So this is not, yes, we are trained in de-escalation, all these things, but this is some human stuff. And the fact of the matter, you have people who are supposed to be highly trained, where did that go? The only tool in your toolbox was a hammer, so that baby became a nail.
So, Reverend Stewart, yesterday on this program, former mayor of Rochester, Bill Johnson, told us that he was surprised when he had heard the city say that some of this new approach in which the city is convening teams who can respond to mental health distress, certain calls that police are sent to but do not involve violence. The city said, yes, we're getting these teams together. We're going to be rolling out this plan, but we're really not operational with it yet. And Bill Johnson said, it's a little bit like building a grocery store and telling people you built the grocery store, and they come down and they look around and there's no food there yet. He said, he was surprised at that, but he thinks that there has to be an effort to get something more functional and operational. Did it surprise you to hear the city say they're not quite ready at scale to do what they have talked about doing with that?
Yeah, I was flabbergasted by that, and there should have been a recourse towards an alternative. The recourse to an alternative would be to have a second layer of people who are in the counseling profession or quasi-counseling profession who could have intervened in that situation while you did have your first responders there. I mean, certainly the city has the clergy on patrol, and they also have a clergy intervention team. So the question is, if the pilot project was in flux, there was another element that they could have turned to in order to deal with that situation. But I'm hoping that the city sees and realizes the meaning and importance of this, and that they're going to get this thing on the road and up and running before June. Because it needs to happen. Let me say a couple other things to Evan. Mm-hmm. First of all, I'm in UCLM, and UCLM also has made proposals and recommendations. The Police Accountability Board has made proposals and recommendations. RAISE has made proposals and recommendations, and we are currently making these recommendations now. Two of the things that are going to be implemented as soon as possible and right away is banning handcuffs on minors, is banning the use of chemical spray, even without the state saying so, because we can do this. The other thing is the Police Executive Research Forum has indicated that police agencies need to foremost have a first principle on the sanctity of human life, which should be at the heart of everything a police department does. Rochester does not have that. Everything should flow from that sanctity of life in how you engage people, in how you interact with people. So that should be the utmost philosophy. The second thing, there needs to be changes in the way police do their work. For example, police need to be trained in as many hours in de-escalation techniques and tactics as it is in use of force. Right now, there is no comprehensive mandated de-escalation program. They get a little bit, but not much. We have put in our proposal and recommendation that there be more of an emphasis on de-escalation over anything else. And the goal is to have an encounter without doing harm to any civilian and minimizing the situation so that life is not put in any harm or any danger at all. And then the third thing for me is you need to get rid of those officers who cross the line in terms of this, because what we need in Rochester relative to the police and Monroe County is to do away with this warrior training and have police as servant protectors. That means that you are going to have to dismantle police culture. And the dismantling of police culture is an important, necessary step in transforming not only the Rochester Police Department, but every police department in Monroe County.
And Melanie Funches, just to kind of build on that point, I mean, in terms of seeing people with humanity, as the Reverend said, as you have said, there was an op-ed in the New York Times by Rashawn Meadows Fernandez titled, "Why Won't Society Let Black Girls Be Children?" And Meadows Fernandez talks about adultification, the way of viewing black girls as like young women instead of girls, the way that black girls are expected to behave more like adults and are, sort of viewed in a very different way. And I think that just tracks. It's an interesting piece if people want to check it out. Why won't society let black girls be children? It tracks with what you're saying. But if you want to add to what Reverend Stewart says, how do we go about achieving some of the goals of changing the culture that might view things this way and lead to this?
To be very honest with you, I am not sure how to change the culture, because the fact of the matter is you can train people in technique. You can train people in intervention. You cannot train morality. I cannot train someone how to see my humanity. Either you see me as a human or you don't. And you walk in with that. So I don't want to say like there's no hope, but my thing is we have got to walk up to that there is inherent bias within the ranks of the culture. Because I want to be clear here. This is the culture of the police department. It's the culture of policing, because we know that policing had its origins in slave catching. So what my grandmother used to say, the way you start a thing is the way a thing is going to be. And so we have got to start to really think about how do we change what the job is of policing, right? So that they have less interactions with these types of cases. Like the example I like to use is I have a health condition and there's times when they have to call 911 for me. Most of the time, the fire department gets there before the EMT. Now, why is that? Because they're closer and whatever, but what is it? They have life-saving skills. They are specially trained to do the job to keep me alive until the EMTs come. The problem, so you have a generalist who can do the job until the specialist shows up. What's happening with policing, they don't call a specialist and they're not a generalist. So it's like me calling the mechanic to fix my broken tooth. They are not the right people. So we need to look at policing differently, look at public safety differently, and say, what do we need to do to keep us safe? What do we need to do to keep us well? and figure out, ask that different question so we can get to different answers and say, what are the different ways that we can go about doing that?
Let me get a phone call from Sarah first in the phone. Hi, Sarah, go ahead.
Hi, this is Sarah from Compere Rochester.
Hi, Sarah. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
How you doing, Evan?
Good.
Good to talk to you. Melanie Robinson, thank you so much for your voices. I really don't even have much to add, but I wanted to talk a little bit more about the crisis intervention team, because I remember sitting at a meeting probably about 10 years ago at this point, and I want to say that Reverend Stewart, you were there with what was then called the emotionally disturbed person's response team.
Yes.
And so to hear that there's something new happening, it's confusing, because I feel like these resources have existed for a long time and they are just underutilized. And I remember the conversation being, you know, why aren't there more people getting this training? And, well, it's voluntary. We want people to be passionate about the cause. And I can wrap my head around that, but I just don't understand why there hasn't been more of this training as considered mandatory for the rest of the force at the bare minimum. And we've had all this time to expand, and there's just not a lot of action. And it's very frustrating. Do you remember that, Reverend Stewart?
I do remember that. And just let me say that more money, more funding certainly needs to be put into a resource that's going to send out people who are trained. And I'm not talking about cops. I'm talking about mental health people and social workers, practitioners, clergy persons who can do this job. Now, admittedly, there are some domestic violence cases that the police are going to have to be at conjointly in order to deal with certain things, especially if a person is armed. But I'm talking about in this situation with the minor and with other situations that have come up, for example, with Daniel Prude and a couple of years before that with Gregory Davis. And I don't know if you all remember that. Gregory Davis was a gentleman who was a veteran and who was, I guess he had some mixtures, but he was tasered and he died because he was tasered. And the local coroner ruled that a homicide. Nothing was ever done about that. And so these are the cases that certainly that we need some intervention on that has not been happening. And certainly with each case compiling upon another, I think people hopefully are beginning to see the light that we need to invest much money into writing this system, because the system is just terrible and it's not working for us at all as it is.
Melanie Funchess, what do you think?
I agree with Reverend Stewart that we need to invest money into other approaches, but I also want to make sure that we're clear that it's not just not any mental health professional will do. We need culturally responsive mental health response. Because it is no good to me if a mental health person comes on who sees my child as older, who sees my child as more dangerous, and says, I feel uncomfortable, I feel unsafe, and calls the cops.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So we need to be incredibly specific in what we want. And what we want is culturally responsive mental health response. Because the fact of the matter is, just like we said at the top of the show, this would not have happened to a white child.
Right.
Why? Because the cops would have seen the child like they could be their own child.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact of the matter is that if we had had a culturally responsive response unit on the scene, I truly believe that they could have de-escalated the child and the mom, who are both having a trauma response. And that could have been de-escalated, and they could have all gotten the help and support they needed.
Well, we're talking to Melanie Funchess and Reverend Lewis Stewart about what happened on Friday.
Let me say this.
Go ahead, Reverend.
Yep. United Christian Leadership Ministry has also proposed a civilian public safety interview panel. And what that does is you have three citizens who comprise this panel who will interview all applicants for the police force after they have passed the agility test, the psychological test, et cetera, because we want to make sure that they are a cultural fit for the community in which they serve. We want to deal with their what we call implicit biases. I would call it racism and other such factors. And so this interview panel composed of citizens would interview these applicants and then send on to the chief of police and recommend whether they should be rejected or accepted. That gives people in the community true community policing power and oversight over the officers who are supposed to be serving the community. And this will also help to dismantle this police culture. And the other thing is we need to look at all those police officers in RPD and even in the county who might have some values that subscribe to white supremacy, white extreme nationalism, or QAnon conspiratorial theories. Those kinds of people cannot be working in the community and cannot be policing in this community.
We're going to take some of your phone calls, and we've got more emails to read. We'll do that on the other side of this only break right here on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on the next Connections, the Attorney General of New York State says the state seems to have undercounted deaths from nursing home patients to COVID-19. What does it mean? What can we learn from it? And where do we go next? In our second hour, understanding fibroids and endometriosis. Talk with you Thursday on Connections. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let me read an email from Dave on the subject first, and then we'll take some more of your phone calls. Dave says, I've seen and read a lot about this, but there are three things that nobody seems to be saying. Number one, the police officer does what sounds to me like a good job in the first two or so minutes of de-escalating the girl. He's soothing, she's calming down, and things are improving. Things go south when the mom catches up to them. She's ballistic right away and reinflames her child. Number two, there's something much deeper here that nobody is talking about. The girl accuses the mom of stabbing the dad and seems to expect violence, actual violence from her mother. At least that's what it sounds like to me. And the mom seems to be accusing the father of abusing the child. Number three, all of the cops I saw in the video were white. Maybe this is parenthetical, but it seems like that's a likely path, especially in this day and age, to inflame a situation like this. That's from David. Melanie Funches, I'll start with you. What do you make of his email?
I'm going to start here. The mother was having a trauma response. What we're not going to do is blame the mother, because what's happening is something that we're not talking about either, is none of us know what happened in that house prior to all this stuff that we're seeing. But what we do know is something traumatic happened. Okay? Now, I know what they're saying about in the first 2 minutes. But my thing is, one, he put his hand on her, and he being the officer, put his hand on her arm and did not listen to what she said. Right? Because what he says, we'll let's go back to the house. Or something of that thing about going back to the house. And as the mother's coming up, he's talking about going back to the house. That's part of what agitated her. It wasn't just what the mom said. It was what he said. Because then she said, I can't go back there. They're all in trauma. Something traumatic happened. And there is not listening going on.
Okay.
There's not listening happening. So I agree that having all the cops there, none of them live in the neighborhood. Because understand, not only do they don't look like the people in the neighborhood, I can almost guarantee that they don't live in that neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Okay, and I don't know and they don't have any cultural ties or any kind of ties to that neighborhood. So they are not authentic people in that neighborhood. So, I mean, it is a recipe for disaster.
Reverend Stewart, you want to add to that?
Yes, I agree with Melanie. And the fact is, something did take place within that family which really stressed out the child and really stressed out the mother. And so I am not equipped really to know what happened or knowledgeable to know what happened in that family. But I can say the obvious is that the cops are agents of the state. They had the badge. They had the gun. They also had the pepper spray. And so it is on them that we focus because of the fact that they handcuffed a young child, and they also chemically pepper sprayed a young child, which should not have happened. And so we need to focus on that. But at the same time, we also know that there needs to be some continued intervention work with that family also.
All right, back to the phones. Mike in Spencerport. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi, I absolutely agree with everything that's being said, but my concern is long-term. What are we going to do for this child? It sounds like this being mental hygiene arrested is not the first time this has happened to this child. No kid at age 9 should have to go through this. So my big question is, you know, after all the scene reporting is done and the legal business has all transpired, ultimately, what is going to be done with this child?
Okay. Thank you, Paul. Melanie, what do you think?
I don't know because I cannot speak to that case. I am not involved with that particular young woman. What I would hope is that she would receive culturally responsive mental health care and support. Now, not just her, but her family. Yes, that her mother, herself, and anybody else in that family who needs the support of culturally responsive professional mental health care and the support of a loving village.
Right.
Because I can't speak directly to that, but something I do want to speak to was that I read that they were talking about wanting to take her to RGH. There is only one child CPAP in the city, and it's at Strong. Why are you going to take her to a place that, after all of this, you're going to take her to a place that can't treat her? I'm just saying, right? We have got to get better at how we address things. But what I want to extend out to that family, if anyone is listening who knows that family, that we the village are committed, and I know I'm speaking for other Black mental health professionals, to trying to wrap around and give you and your baby any support that they may need.
Reverend Stewart, anything to add before I get back to your phone calls here?
Yeah, Melanie's correct. You just can't treat the child alone. You got to treat her as part of the family system, which needs to help, because there's something going on with the mother, which the child basically is reacting to the family system. And so the whole family needs to be treated, because the whole family needs to be restored to wholeness. And that's what I can say on the matter.
All right. Paul and Canandaigua next on the phone. Go ahead, Paul.
Thanks for taking my call. I pretty much was going to say the same things that David just said. When I listened to it, I didn't see the mother as traumatized. I saw her as being verbally abusive to her daughter, claiming she had custody. The daughter, you know, if you saw your dad give your mother a headlock, why would she want to go see her dad? So I think it's presumptive to say that the mother wasn't a part of this. And there's a lot of dads who are good dads, and, you know, things are said, and I think you really need to get to the bottom of that, because the girl really wanted to see her dad. And the mother, to me, that was verbally abusive. So I don't necessarily buy that the mom was traumatized and the way she treated her own daughter. I think she was part of the problem. And that's it. Thanks.
Okay, Paul. Melanie Funches, go ahead.
Well, I'm going to say what I said, and I said what I said. The mother, something traumatic happened. And different people respond to trauma in different ways. I'm not condoning what was said. I am just trying to offer some understanding. The fact of the matter, we want to think trauma is always, like, sad is always crying. People who are sad don't always cry. Just like people who are angry don't always yell. People who are traumatized, we cannot characterize how another person will behave in the midst of a response. And if there was something that, and we said something that happened, we don't know what it is. So we cannot, we are not going to be inspector detector. We're not going to be, you know, the armchair quarterback. But what we do know is there was a traumatic experience happening. And both of those individuals, the child and the mother, were involved in it.
Mm-hmm. Reverend Stewart, anything to add there?
Yeah, well, I had directed at me some questions from black men and women who felt upset also about the verbal abuse of the mom to the child. So clearly, you know, there's an intent to sue the city, but I'm hoping the whole family receives the intervention that's necessary to heal that family. That's what I'm hoping. That's what I'm praying for.
Rick emails to say, Evan, I agree about providing care long term. Our community needs to be serious about funding mental health care. And that does mean shifting funds from law enforcement to mental health care. On the phone next is Peter. Go ahead, Peter.
Thank you. I'd like to extend my regards to the community directly dealing with this. the lack of self-awareness on the police is astounding. The CNN headline could have been, look how they handled a 9-year-old girl. And this is what we got. And so it begs the question, is it blatantly racist or how dumb are they in that moment?
I would say both.
You know, you have this and it's just pathetic. And there's no accountability because they keep getting away with it because they're the cops.
Yep.
So, you know, my sympathies, and it just looks really bad. This is the worst look that the city has gotten, and it's all on them.
Hmm. Thank you, Peter. Go ahead, Reverend.
No, Peter, it's both. It's the fact that, number one, it continues to be a repetition in terms of the behavior and the devaluation of black life in all phases of it, all ages. That's number one, the devaluation of black life. The second thing is that part of that devaluation of black life is police culture, which needs to be dismantled and destroyed. And the third thing is that implicit biases, or as I say, racism, is all part of this, and it's all part of perceptions, because as I said in the beginning of the show, they would not have handled this situation, they would have handled it differently if it was a white child involved, and that's just a fact. They treat us differently. They have always treated us differently historically. And unless we change it, they will continue to do so. But I think this is the time for change. This is the time to interrupt that disease. And racism certainly is a disease, and we've got to do it now. That's the urgency of the matter.
Melanie Funches?
I agree that we need long-term solutions. We do need investment in mental health services. And not for nothing, when we come out of COVID, with all of the things of isolation, the need is going to be even greater. So we need investment in mental health services. We need to divest from the police department and invest in mental health services. And in that investment, there need to be community-based tools so that our community can become the owners of the tools of their own healing. There are community-based interventions that lay people can be taught to do with other lay people to be able for us to be able to support ourselves, to work on our healing with ourselves. be the owners of the tools of our own healing, because we do understand, like Reverend Stewart, I agree with everything he said. The culture of the police department, the culture of policing is poison. It's like black people and the culture and the meeting up of police is like Superman and Kryptonite. Okay, let's be clear. And this is, and the thing is, what we understand is the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. So now we have this 9-year-old girl. Before her was Daniel Prue. Before him was Christopher Pate. Before them, there has been Benny Ward. There's been name after name after name after name. How many people have to die and be injured before we see?
Mary Ellen emails to say, Evan, my comment is that the police chief and the mayor should resign due to their lack of leadership. Obviously, nothing has changed since the death of Mr. Prude last year. The officers that pepper sprayed the poor young girl need to be fired immediately. This is a no-brainer to me. That is from Mary Ellen. Next is Cherise in Rochester. Go ahead, Cherise.
I find it really disheartening to hear callers calling in with negativity towards the mom. People of color respond differently. People who have experienced trauma respond differently to issues when they have them. And more so, and a lot of the people who are calling, they're people from the suburbs, Canandaigua, Spencerport. A lot of these officers who are responding to these calls, they live in Brockport, Spencerport, Hilton, all of the suburbs around Monroe County, Brighton. They can't relate to what it is that the family is possibly going through, which is the number one problem that we're having, which is why I believe you even have Melanie Funches and Reverend Stewart on your show. And so my question would be, when you have a majority of suburban Caucasian officers responding to trauma-related, domestic violence-related, mental health-related calls, what else do you expect? And even though they want to make a change and increasing people of color in the police force, this could potentially take 20, 30 years to get what it is we need. How do we speed up this process? How do we actually help our people right now?
Thank you, Cherise. Reverend Stewart, go ahead.
Yes, I wanted to add also the fact is that this culture in the police department is so strong, and I'm just not talking about RPD, but I'm talking about all police agencies, that even when you hire black police officers and brown police officers, there's no guarantee that they are going to treat black and brown people any differently than white cops have treated black and brown people because of the culture of policing. And so that's why it behooves us to take seriously dealing with the attitudes of cops, dealing with policies and practices. All of those things need to be changed from the top down, from the bottom up. And that's the only way we're going to transform policing. And what Melanie was talking about also is all a part of public safety, teaching people how to take care of other people in terms of mental health and being a support system for them. That's all part of it. And so certainly there is value in putting funding in culturally competent counselors who are going to be, and social workers who are going to be able to do that particular type of work. 93% of the officers of RPD live outside of the city. So they have no cultural investment in the city. They have no roots in the city except to interact negatively with people of color.
Melanie Funches.
We need culturally responsive mental health services long term in our community. When we keep talking about reform with policing reform, and people have said, well, we need to diversify the police force. What the studies say, in order for the a diversification to have an effect on culture, it needs to be at least 40%. people of color to change that, to change it. Using the tools that we have now, it will take us decades before the Rochester Police Department has 40% black and brown officers. Decades. We don't have that kind of time. So what we need to do is we need to reassess public safety, divest from things that are harmful to us, and invest in things that are going to help us stay well and safe.
Yeah, the city is still on a consent decree in order to increase the percentage of black and brown police officers within RPD, but that has not been done yet because, number one, we keep on losing population. Number two, there are a lot of black and brown people who do not want to be police officers. And so we're going to have to seriously look at that problem because it is a problem.
Susan says, this is all incredibly heartbreaking. I cried my eyes out listening to the audio you aired of this little girl. If there is ever a time when a child is fearful at home, and clearly this child felt unsafe at home, a police officer should be a safe person to whom to turn. The police department failed this child. That's from Susan.
Well, the police officer is a safe person in the white community, but white police officer in the black community is not a safe person.
Reverend Lewis,
we have to teach our children they're not safe.
Reverend Lewis Stewart, president of United Christian Leadership Ministry. Again, I wish we were meeting under different terms, especially on your birthday, sir. But I always appreciate your time, and I know we'll talk soon.
Take care.
Melanie Funches, mental health advocate, member of the Greater Rochester Black Agenda Group and the Black Healers Network. Same, Melanie. I always appreciate the insight from you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Megan Mack is the producer and Rob Braden is the engineer. Please take care of each other. We'll talk tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.